Welcome to the Black Anime Podcast.
You see me dead, do you? Well then. Go on.
She's all about that ass. That's like I love Naruto.
You are now tuned into the Black Anime Podcast.
Not the same.
Bro, that nigga was strong.
He just got caught up in
the Emma is Naruto.
Not the same, bro. Not even close.
I'm going to kill him.
You are now tuned in to the Black Anime Podcast.
This is the end of the road. Afro Samurai.
What's good, y'all? It's Aaron, a.k.a. The Anime Anthology, a.k.a. The Lost Homie, here at Black Anime and Off Black. And today we have a very special guest that we're doing an interview with that's going to introduce herself in just a second. For this interview, if you want to read the transcript and a little bit of extra stuff that'll be in there, you know, get the link straight at the source, pictures and a little blur about some of the stuff that she does. You can go to offblackmag.com, offblxxkmag.com. You can check that out and you can watch the whole thing on there and you can read through it. So today we're doing an interview. I think it's our last time we do a third world manga. So say we're going a little different, going to the horror side, the scary side. with our horror manga extraordinaire. She's very versed in it. And if you haven't seen her work or been to her page or her website, it's very stylistic. It's very gorgeous. It's very good. You can see the homages basically right there on page. And she does a great job with admitting that feeling of sometimes that fear that excites you a little bit. And so without further ado, I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Hello, thank you so much. My name is Gigi Murakami. I'm a horror manga artist and illustrator. Primarily working in horror with Black female leads, typically. And that's me.
She's being humble, you guys. She's being very humble. Currently, how many manga / stories are you working on?
Currently, including client stuff.
I think I've seen 2-year client stuff. So yeah, let's add those to it. Because technically you're working on those too. So.
Well, so the stuff that's on my website is stuff that's done already. So I have, other than Resenter is ongoing. I have about four projects that's done. I do have another one shot that's finished, but it's Patreons only. I think I might open that up to the public in September, which is like, I feel like people are starting to know that that's what I do. So like people are not going to the Patreon. They're like, I'll just wait a month. I know she's going to open it up. But I do have another one shot that's on my Patreon called Tooth Fairy. So
oh, I've seen,
I guess.
I've seen pictures of that one too. So yeah.
Yeah, I put some sneak peeks on the Instagram, but I think that's 7 stories, about 7 stories. I have another one shot that I'm working on now with a homie of mine, Kevin, who actually did the promo reel for Resenter when I first announced it. He's a filmmaker, and our aesthetics are just like very aligned. So I'm working with him and he's going to be animating that one shot. So you'll be able to read it and watch it. and then another potential client job. I have 2 potential. One is a client, one is another collab, but a lot of stuff in the pipeline.
Now, I would say she's being humble because, like, I know that outside of creating manga, you also stream. I looked on your website. I was all up in your info. You design. You do some writing. Still do commissions and, you know, much more. So how do you juggle all that along with your personal life?
Oh, that's a good question. You weren't playing around when you said you was going to ask something new. I've been waiting for people to ask that question. I don't know if you know Midnight Comics, but I saw Midnight Comics at, I saw them at DreamCon, and we were online going to like this after party, and he asked me the same thing, and I was like, nobody's ever asked me that before. Like, how are you asking me this great question, like online, trying to get to the bar? But how do I juggle that? That's a good question. I have a planner. I mentioned earlier before we got on air that I am trying to like tweak my social media stuff, but this is all related. But I have a planner, digital and an analog planner. So this is my planner. This is where all my plannings go at for the week. And I also have a Notion workspace that I use.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so a lot of my content stuff is up there. I have an assistant who helps me out with my admin and like my content planning. So if you are a part of the email newsletter gang, she writes all that stuff. I just kind of like give her the rundown and she does all of that. So I do have a little bit of help in the admin. I don't have much help doing art. I have like no help really doing art. I don't have an art assistant. But as far as admin and content scheduling and stuff goes, I do have an intern who helps me with that. So I guess just to add a little bit more value to that answer, a quick like rundown of what my schedule is. I am full-time. I do this full-time. This is my day job, creating manga, running my online store, and also going to conventions and creating content to sort of push my work. Let me pop on over to the Notion page because that's where it's all at.
We used to use Notion for a lot of stuff that we did. My problem with Notion is I don't like that it don't have like notifications. Like, and I think that like they didn't have push notifications. So like so I would just like run past dates and I would keep missing them. And I'm like,
see,
I didn't have any push notifications.
You can put notifications on Notion, but it has to be for specific items. So let's say also if it's that important, you got to put it in like your Google Calendar or whatever calendar you use to actually give you the push notifications. But if you're scheduling something on Notion and like, let's say you need to do it in a week, if you're scheduling content, for example, and you need to post it in a week, you can put a reminder on Notion in that specific post. So you know how like you set up the page with all of your whatever. I don't know if you have like a due date that's in that actual page. Notion is like super complicated. So it's simple when you know how to use it, but like when you don't know how to use it, it's mad complicated. But and it's hard to describe, but if you know it, you know it. But like if you have like a due date set up for your calendar, you can actually add a reminder on there.
Okay.
It's hard to explain, but like calendar.
I'll have to go back and check because like for Off Black, we use a different business. We use like something called Trello. And I like Trello a lot.
I know Trello. Yeah, I've heard of that. I mean, if it works for you, that's what's up. That's what works for you. Yeah. I like Notion because it's really customizable, but there's also like a ton of templates and stuff that you can get from specifically other artists who just like, it's just like part of the niche that I'm a part of. And like, they typically just have what I need. And I don't know, it's super customizable. That's what makes it complicated. Cause like, there's so much that you can do. It's like Photoshop, like, but you got to learn bit by bit by bit. And I'm still like learning as I go with Notion, but
yeah, we kind of got off
on the Notion page a little bit, right?
But, yeah, a little bit. No, I agree. Like that's when we were using Notion. That's one of the reasons why I really liked it. Like I really enjoyed, like, There's like types of notes, like Oxford notes and all. I didn't even know
you we can't get too into it because we're not getting paid to sponsor Notion. So keep it brief.
But yes, I totally understand what you said. I totally understand what you're going.
You know. Okay, let's just say this, wrap it up. Notion's good, but it's a little complicated. But like once you get it, you get it. So to kind of go through like my week, this is not standard for every week, but this is like ideally like what I'm trying to get my weeks to look like. And it gets like that sometimes, but not all the time. But Mondays, I am typically like I start my week in the middle of my workflow. So Mondays, I am editing manga pages or editing videos for social media or YouTube or whatever. Sometimes I pack orders. I try to pack them on Fridays and then ship them out so that they get to the customer on Monday. And if it doesn't work out that way, then I pack and ship on Monday. On Tuesdays, I am working on manga pages, storyboards, and I'm studying Japanese, which is a thing that I do. But Tuesdays and Wednesdays, both of those days look the same. And those are the days that I also stream. And then Thursdays are my admin days. That is, I take an entire day to like plan all of my stuff. That includes literally any admin. Admin, I just include as like anything that needs to be written, anything that needs to be scheduled, anything that needs to be reviewed, any tasks that I have to send off to my assistant. Literally anything. If I have to fix something on my website, if I have to update inventory, all of that stuff happens on Thursdays. And then Fridays, I try to film for social media. Mm-hmm. I would like to start batching more, like short form videos, like we were talking about. I'd like to start batching more on Fridays. So ideally, the whole Friday is for filming. And during the filming, I'm either working on manga pages or an illustration. Or maybe something else. Maybe I'm just filming me at my desk. Because I do like, this is so corny. This is like the millennial in me, but like I do like inspirational stuff. And like, I do. I love inspirational stuff. I love quotes. I know it doesn't look like it, but I'm a very sentimental girly. Like, if I feel like I'm still working on a page or like I can't really show this because there's spoiler material in the pages that I'm working on, I'll just record me at my desk in different angles because I like film and I like filmmaking. And I'll try to get like interesting angles of me working at my desk. And then, you know, that'll be the filming on Fridays. And then if I have enough time and I feel like I did my job for the day, then I will stream a horror game on Twitch. But that stream is like very back burner. If I am tired or if I don't have enough time to really like enjoy the stream because I have a bunch of work that didn't get done for the week, I will cancel the game streams. That's just like extra fun with the community.
They don't love that. They don't love that at all. Every once in a while I'll be like, you know what? I'm gonna tune in this Friday and it don't be there. And I'm like, wow.
I know. And I have to do a better job of letting people know when I'm canceling game streams. Cause sometimes I just be like, nope, I'm overwhelmed. I'm tired. Not today, y'all. And then Saturday, I try to be easy on the weekends, but I do have like three jobs. Well, yeah, I have like three jobs. I'm working with clients. I'm working on my own stuff. And then I have my online shop. So, you know.
Hey, it just goes on a resume. It just goes on a resume, okay? I totally understand that. It just goes on a resume.
It does. But it's just like, you know. So Saturday is kind of a catch-all. I typically don't work on the weekends unless it's like a little bit on Sunday. But currently, right now, it's Saturday is a catch-all for me to get any pages done that I need to get done. Japanese studies and some storyboarding. It's a catch-all for anything I need to get done. And then Sunday, I just started this. Sunday is going to be editing again for videos and for any social media content videos. And yeah. And I work out here and there on like 3 days of the week, something like that. So it's a lot. That's just the current schedule right now. I'm trying to work to a point where I can catch up in my work enough where I don't have to be 7 days a week. And like, it sounds like a lot, but I procrastinate a lot. I get distracted a lot. So
in my head, I was like, when's time for hubby? You know, he just watching out the door like,
wow. Oh no. Hubby's a hustler out here too. Oh no.
Oh, he be hustling? Okay. Oh,
hubby be in his own studio, just going in. This is a working household. Like the only person that don't work in this house is the dog. The dog is the only person that gets to live off of like any fruits of labor. Like she got like 3 beds. Like
she be living life. She like everybody busy. I'm just going, you know what I mean? The bowl's still full, so I'm be good.
She be chilling. So she the only one. Only thing she gotta do is go for a walk, and she don't even want to do that. She is like, this dog is so spoiled. But yeah, this is not my ideal schedule. Ideally, I would like to have like my weekends off, but this is kind of where I'm at right now. Ideally I would have like a Sunday off. I would still study Japanese or something, or just like, because that's more hobby. But Sundays I would start planning my week if I didn't get that on Thursdays. But yeah, don't be worried, y'all. Don't be worried. This is not the ideal situation. This is not the average. This is just like, I'm in crazy work mode right now, and a lot of stuff is popping up, and the deadlines is coming, and I have to kind of like, I just got to hustle hard for the week.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
I do what I do.
Like, you know, for like Black people, like we're used to being, I mean, that's a big thing for hustlers, getting our shit right, right? And I feel like being in the anime manga community, especially as a creator, it feels like that's not like this push, but something we got to do. I mean, there's not a lot of help out there for us, or even right. Like, you know, teams and groups that's doing that kind of stuff. And so also as a Black person, you know, we probably both heard it, you know, a lot of times people, especially you that aren't Black, or some Black people, they're like, Black people aren't into anime and manga. Like, this isn't our thing. And for creators, it's taking a step further where it's like, you know, we're not Japanese, so why are we creating anime and manga? Like, no matter what we do, it'll never be anime and manga. And so my question is like, what do you think about people who have that sentiment, especially someone who, you know, has a Japanese family now, and so they know what you do. What do you feel about that sentiment and people that have those kind of sentiments?
I think those are people that are just bored on the internet, honestly. I don't pay no mind to them. I personally, like, somebody just came up to me and said, you're not a real manga artist. Nobody's ever said that to me to my face. And even if they did, like, I don't know you. You don't know me. And as far as I'm concerned, like, the manga industry, like, I have friends in the manga industry and they support me. They are like 100% like, go do it. They don't call me a comic artist. They call me as I want to be addressed. And they don't look at my stuff as like I'm a faker, or I don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a gimmick or anything. But it's also like, I know the history of manga. I study Japanese. I read a ton of manga. Like, I'm very well versed in what I'm doing. I could understand if like I didn't speak any Japanese, if I didn't attempt to speak Japanese. And I'm not saying that you have to be married to a Japanese person in order to qualify. I'm not saying that at all. And even me learning Japanese had nothing to do with my husband. I've been studying Japanese since I was 12. But I'm just that much of a manga otaku. Like, I've been doing this since I was 12. I've been reading manga since I was 7. So for somebody like that, I think that person is, I feel a little bad for them, mostly because I feel like maybe they feel like their space is being encroached on, and I know how that feels for me, and I don't like that. But I would hope that person would sort of get rid of their biases and like take a minute to be like, to understand that manga is for everyone, because unless that person is Japanese, like, somebody could easily say to them, like, why are you enjoying manga? You're not Japanese. Like, that wasn't for you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I would just hope that that person can kind of open up their mind a little bit more to understand that, like it's okay to share your toys. Yeah. And also, like, you never know, like, whose story you might read, and, you know, it might actually resonate with you. So I think I would say open your mind to that person.
I would agree with that. You know, I think a lot about how we create distinctions between different things, right? Like, anime is just, you know, Japanese for animation, which is the mm-hmm. same as, like, you know, we have cartoons or just animation, and mangas, Japanese comic books, just as we have our own comic books, right? So
that's the thing too, like, not to cut you off, but, like, manga doesn't even mean Japanese comic books. It literally just means mm-hmm. comic books. Manga is the word for comics in Japanese. Like, they say the word comics for comic books the same way we say manga for, like, manga. Like, it's all linguistics. That's the other thing that's mm-hmm. so silly about this. Like, it's just words. Yeah. It's just words. So, yeah. My question sorry to cut, like, you off.
No. It enhances the question. Is, you know, most people, like, you know, Saturday AM, Saturday PM, you see them, like, they're a white manga, like, there's no difference between anime and cartoons. And for the most part, I agree. But then at some point, I do believe that the distinction, there's not a problem with the distinction. The problem is the bias that comes with the distinction, right? So as someone who, you know, calls themselves a mangaka, comic artist, instead of a comic artist, what do you think makes your style distinct from what we get from, you know, common American comics?
I think as far as my style, and something that I worked really hard to try to get a good handle on, and I studied a lot of manga, especially, like, during 2020, and I tried to get a good handle on it, was I think that my style takes a lot of shortcuts that are seen in manga. Specifically, and, like, this is all very subjective, right? Because, like, when we think of, like, manga or, like, anime, we think of, like, for noses, like, two dot noses.
Yeah.
Or, like, maybe just, like, a line. Usually shoujo anime has, or, like, shoujo anime, shoujo manga typically has, like, the line noses. But for Black features, our features are more, like, predominant. They're softer, they're rounder. Oftentimes they're bigger, right? Wider. So it's like, I tried to pay a lot of attention to how the manga artists that I am inspired by and influenced by, how they sort of, what shorthands they use for their faces and for different types of faces, and try to apply that specifically to Black faces. Because I feel like you never quite see Black faces very much in, like, manga and anime. Mm-hmm. And when you do see it, it just feels like a little off, like something's off. But very, because very of those, it's very, yeah, it's up in the air a lot of times, like, you know, 50-50 for sure. But I feel like because of those shortcuts that I've studied, and I have kind of, I feel like I wouldn't say I've perfected it, but, like, I'm very close. Like, I feel like people can recognize that my characters are Black, and that it is in, like, the essence of manga because of the shorthands that I've taken and kind of, like, made my own. But those shorthands don't look like American comics. Yeah. And that's why. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, why I decide to call myself a manga artist as opposed to, like, a comic artist, though, and I don't think you asked that, but I just wanted to add some more extra value.
I'm fine with that.
Like I mentioned earlier, like, I the first comic I, well, not the first comic I ever read was manga, but I read manga very early when I was 7 years old. And my first manga was a horror manga. So, like, I have more of a relationship to manga and Japanese comics than I do American comics. And I don't know if this was, like, you know, I'm going to be candid because we're Black, but I don't know if this was, like, a racial thing, or mm-hmm. even on the broader spectrum, if this was, like, a gender thing. But like, I just didn't feel very comfortable being around other people who liked American comics and being around those spaces. And even though I am adjacent to the comics industry, like the big publishing comics industry, I still feel very awkward being in like a comic book store. Bookstore, I'm great. If I'm in the comic book section in a bookstore or the manga section in a bookstore, I'm great. I'm chilling. But specifically a comics shop, I do still feel a twinge of anxiety around that. And I didn't have like a family member who introduced me to like American comics, to like DC or Marvel. The closest that I got to DC or Marvel as a kid was like cartoons. Yeah. That was it. So that's why I align the way that I do.
I didn't get into comics, I think, until really I got older. I didn't read them as a kid. I'd read in fiction I've read a little bit of comics, not a lot of manga. Like I have the manga I have in my house. Like, I'm from Jersey. Like, this is my house, but like, that's my home house. Like my parents and everything. I got I got a Jesus manga in there. Cause my grandma was like, you like comics, right? You like anime? Here's a little manga messiah. Go read this.
I'm dead.
So growing up, I wasn't like, most of the stuff I knew about Marvel and DC was from that. And then I transferred to the comics. Cause again, I had a family friend who like was like, oh, I look like read this, read that, something like that. And I'm still not fully into it for that.
It's usually
reason.
How it goes though. Yeah. Like there's usually like, from what I've seen, is usually like a father or like an uncle or somebody who had their comic collection and then they kind of pass it down. That's typically like the rite of passage, like how it goes. Because like American comics are so, the timelines are so convoluted that like, well, I mean, that's no shade, but it is like, it's a lot. It's let me not say convoluted, but it's like an expansive timeline. So it's hard to just jump in. So typically there is somebody who kind of like hands down their comics that like, you know, that none of my family members read comics. And even if they did, like they didn't think to pass it down to me. So
I mean, I'll say this, I was agreeing with you. I mean, I as someone who's read comics, I can be convoluted. And I think we like to, a lot of comic fans like to minimalize that and act like, oh no, if you just read Superman number one from 1975, and then you can jump ahead and read Superman number one from 2010, and then read this run
right
to understand this, and they're like, oh, that's so easy. And I think I was talking to my girlfriend about this. It's like a big part that makes manga so accessible is also I can buy a volume with 10 chapters and it's like $15. A volume of a comic is 30. A hardback is 50. And it's like, and so like the price point is also an accessible thing, especially for kids. You know, like, am I going to go buy one issue of a $3 issue of a comic, or I can save up, get 15, I can read 10 issues or 10 chapters of a manga and stuff like that always plays a part in it too. Like with growing up too, like, you know, because if you're not, again, if like my dad's frat brother, he stopped collecting. He's done collecting. He said, I'm done. And he gave me his collection, like still wrapped and everything. And he has obscure stuff. He has like indie obscure, and they're just single issues. And I don't really read single issues. If it's not in the volume, I don't read it, just because I'm not going to go buy 30, 40, 100 single issues of Superman.
Right. Like,
give me a nice little volume with the first 10,
right,
40, you know,
especially Superman. Like, how many, like, where's the real danger? Like, how dangerous can we really get with Superman in like in 20 issues? Like, let's be for real.
It's honestly, yeah, you have to get the issue 175 to be like, oh wow,
for the real threats.
Yeah,
real right. Right.
That's true. In your artist statement, you say that your work is for people who want to engage the Black female experience in a novel way, and that you aim to create a different way of looking into the world of Black femalehood. Do you believe with the works you've already created and you will create that you have achieved these affirmations?
I think I have. At least for me, I feel satisfied in what I've put out. And there's still a lot more that I want to put out. But as far as like reception, I have felt like people have felt seen for sure. And like that statement is more so for the general public. But first and foremost, I always do this for Black femmes. I want Black femmes to be seen in my work. And I have gotten that. I have absolutely been told that, like, I've had this experience, or like, oh my God, like just like a very, just like a relatable experience, regardless of like how horrific the situation is and the actual like story. But like, even with like some of my just illustrations, there's this one illustration that I have called Don't Touch Me. And it's of a Black young woman with beaded hair. And there are all these like ghostly white arms and hands and stuff trying to grab her. And she just looks like terrified. And she's facing away from the hands. And I mean, if you're Black, this is coming from an obvious experience. Yeah. So there was a young woman on Twitter who commented an experience about how a situation like that had actually happened to her. And then in the thread, she actually posted my sticker and was like, well, anyway, here's some work from my favorite artist, And I was like, oh, wow. And the post kind of went viral and I was like, oh, shoot. But I think I had wrote like, when art imitates life, but it's like, it's a blending. It's when life imitates art, and it's both of that. But yeah, to the general public, it's just like, oh, it's ghost hands. But like, to the very well-trained eye, they understand what that is about. So I do feel like I have reached that, but I definitely feel like there's a lot more still to go with that. I do feel like there's a lot more to go until I reach the full capacity of like what I've written in my artist statement.
I feel like Black people, we as Black people and people of color, like we've been getting a lot of movies, like we like to satirize and not metaphorize, it's not a word, but turn into metaphors and turn into stories, our trauma, right? And and like They Clone Tyrone that just came out, right? Like,
and I haven't seen it yet. Oh god.
Maybe I'll use a different movie then. I haven't seen it.
Everybody's been asking me. I need to get on it so I can make some content about it.
I think you'll love it if you watch it. I think, like, you know, I'll go to Jordan Peele. Jordan Peele is always the easiest one to go, right? When we talk about satirization, we talk about, you know, using metaphors and creating basically whole movies around one statement that a Black that Black people universally, especially in the United States, feel, right? Yeah. And so I heard you in another interview with the Black Rama podcast where they asked you that question, talking about that, right? And talking about like how you satirize and how you talk about, not, well, not satirize because it's not funny, but it's to us, like, we look at like, oh, I see it. And like, to us, right, like, at times we see comedy in things that other people see as horror, right? And so with that, how do you blend that magic? How do you get like between those lines where it's like, this is a real life experience I've went through, I've made it into a horror, and now it's relatable? And like, how do you blend that?
That's a good question. Damn, you on fire tonight. These are some good ass questions. Yeah, that's actually really hard because like, not hard. The answer is not hard, but how to do that was hard. I've kind of mentioned this just offhand and publicly before, but like, I never wanted to feel like I'm making fun of our pain. And like, specifically with like Black femmes and like with topics of beauty, I never wanted to feel like I'm poking fun. And if there is something that's going on, it's there for a reason. But as far as like comedy, I mean, for comedy too, it's the same thing where it's kind of like lightly poking fun, or like, you know, it's like a wink and kind of like that. It's maybe I was wrong. Maybe it is a little harder to kind of sum this up.
I would say I would liken it to like how you're talking about, like, let's talk about Jordan Peele's movie Us, is the part where they kill the white people and then fuck the police comes on. Right?
Yeah.
Like, we're like, I mean, white people are gonna laugh too, but like, they're laughing at the song. We're laughing at the irony. We're like,
yeah,
like, genius. Like, wow, that's, he's a genius to put that to be the song. Right. And I think like, that's like the four artists like you. Yours is unique and Jordan Peele. And then there's another black artist. Well, the person who made They Clone Tyrone, you need to watch that movie. That's a genius. There is a woman who does similar stuff. I cannot remember her name off the top of my, Jordan Peele's always the easy one to group, but she's another one. She does, I forgot what movie series she made, movie that she made, but like that marriage between, you know, the horror, but not the, dang, the word, like, I thought this would be a good line. I can't remember. The horror, but not, you know, I'm making fun of it, but the grotesque, there it is. The horror, but not grotesque. You know, like making fun, like you know what I'm saying? Like making fun and making it morbid, but then not going to being like where it becomes, you know, trauma porn, you know, like there's a balance in it.
There is a balance in it. Yeah. So getting back to like what I was saying about like the beauty thing, and like, I'm only saying the beauty because as a black woman, like it is so, I think it's so easy for like black women and femmes to like feel the twinge of the pain of like, you're making fun of me. This is beauty. Yeah. Like you're calling me ugly or something. So like, that's why I keep going back to it. I just feel it's the easiest, but while I don't want to make fun and like, while I don't want to poke and like traumatize, like I do want to get the message that I'm trying to get across. So I do think that like you still have to kind of put yourself out there and like do the thing, you know, like,
yeah, I get what you mean.
There's a piece that I did where this black woman, and like she's like shocked and like the half of her face is kind of like crackling off. And This is a running theme that I've had in my work that I'm realizing is this piece. There was another piece long ago that I did where a woman's face was kind of like crackling off. But there's always something with like women and beauty and like the ugliness of like how it can all be. When I created that piece, it was like people are either going to get it or they're not going to get it.
Yep.
And people love that piece. I made pins of that and like, those things were flying at DreamCon. Like people, the shirts for those have flown. People love that piece. And it's like, I think as long as you think critically about what taking it too far can look like, and obviously don't do that, move within the message and like what you're trying to tell people and what you're trying to get across while being mindful and thinking very critically about like how badly that can go wrong and making sure you don't cross that line. That can be difficult though.
Yeah.
And I'm always thinking about that. It's a little easier now because I've been doing this for a while. But when I first was like, I've always been a horror fan. There's not enough black horror. I want to do black horror. And I specifically want to do like black horror manga. When I first affirmed myself with that, it was very difficult. It was very difficult. I didn't know what to draw. I didn't know how to draw what. I felt very guilty. I felt like if this goes wrong, I'm going to be canceled. Like people are not going to fuck with me no more. like, you know, but you do have to kind of take a chance and you kind of have to trust your own integrity that like what I'm trying to do is within good faith. And when I feel like it's not in good faith, I will try to tweak it and try to at least make people feel comfortable with a laugh. Cause like some of this stuff can be like traumatic, you know? Like specifically with, well, not specifically, but one example, is like for one of my illustrations, let's just say like Black Women versus the World. Mm-hmm. Like that, like there's a lot of truth there. And like for some people who are like, that's like their reality, like that can be a reminder of like how difficult it is. But like it starts to become like kind of funny or like kind of like relaxing when the danger is zombies. How many times have you said to a friend, like, what would you do in the middle of a zombie apocalypse? Like, you tripping people? Like, what's going on?
You know? Me and our friends talk about it. We had a whole conversation at dinner the other day. One of them was like, I'm going to go buy a bunker in the hill. The other one was like, I'm going to be on a yacht in the middle of the ocean. I was looking at both of them like, y'all are crazy.
Right. Like, how many times have we had those hypotheticals? So, like, I think the best way to go about it is to sort of use metaphor and analogy. It's just an easier way to like get people to sort of open up their mind without exposing them too much to the horror of it all, especially since like these are like social issues and like gender issues and racial issues that I'm like kind of weaving in between. And also like in the like kind of, what am I trying to say? In the in the spirit of a Jordan Peele, right? Okay. I want everybody to read my stuff.
Yeah.
I just want the people who it's for to fuck with my stuff though and understand it. But like, and the best way to do that is like analogy, is metaphor. Cause it's like the people who are going to take it at face value can still get entertainment for it. But for those who know and go deeper, like, you know,
the girls that get it, get it. You know,
the girls that get it, get it. Exactly. Exactly. It's not easy to do, though. It's not easy because like when you try to find those, like you have to think of those comparisons. It's like, is that too horrific? Is that too much? Is the imagery on that going to be too bad? Or, you know, all that other stuff. And but people do like horror. Horror is like the distant, well, not distant, but it's the close relative of comedy. Yes. And Black people love to laugh. So yes, I think it's a lie that like Black people don't like horror. People like horror. We like horror deep down. We like horror.
I agree. I mean, I'm not the biggest horror fan, but the thing is, I'm like, for me, a lot of horror to me isn't scary because all of it is like bad or it's from a different point of view. Like where it's like, there's like a, there's one horror movie I was rag on. I can't remember his name. I just remember scenes from it.
And what's some of the scenes? So I wonder like if I've seen it.
It starts off with like there's like family at a yard sale and the girl, she goes to buy this like little trinket, like little trunk thing. An old lady's in the house screaming at the window, screaming at her not to take it or whatever. And when she gets up, when she goes home, she opens it up and like, it like releases like a demon or something into her body and like, like all this, I forget what it's called, but
no, I don't know. Dang, was it a recent movie? Like,
nah,
in the past like 10 years.
I saw it in like middle school or high school, one of those two. Like it's been a while, so like at least less than a decade, but around that time, yeah. I can't remember what it was called, but there was a scene in that movie where they're at the table, two girls, the dad, and dad's talking, he puts his hand on the table, she like just jumps up and just stabs his hand with the fork. And he just looks up and says, Emily, what are you doing? And I was like, let that be a Black castle. Like, I can't take it. I can no longer take it seriously. I'm like I zone out. Like so like Jordan Peele to me, and like I'm not a big jump scare guy. Like I'm jump, like but like I'm gonna leave movie like, okay, it was just jump scares. But like Jordan Peele to me, like that eerie, that feeling that, and there's a few other ones. I think like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think I saw that. I like that a little bit.
Yeah.
I like how that was the other face with the, that was so, woo, like that got me. And even like ones that have that eerie feeling to it, like, you know, you like the audience knows something's off, and like and that kind of thing. And so like those are the ones that usually I like. And I also feel like that's what, you know, a lot of Black people, like, we don't relate to a lot of the things that are put on screen because it's not from our lens. It's not even tried to fit our lens. Like, it's not even attempted. Right. And when they do, we get like Leprechaun Back to the Hood, which is hilarious. I'm sorry. Funny as shit. But it's not like, you know, really relating to us on that sense of like getting us uneasier or.
It's like we're part of the gag, low key.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of being in on the joke, we are the joke. We are the we are the whore. We are the problem. Right. And so,
or at least like the prop to the punchline. Yeah, totally. That is why I respect Jordan Peele so much. I have not met him yet, but I'm putting that I'm manifesting that. I'm manifesting something with him and Monkey Paw. I'm manifesting it. But that's why I respect him so much, because he has really like rejuvenated Black horror. It's never gone anywhere. Or not that it's never gone anywhere, but it's existed before. It's just, it was stagnant. It was stale. But like there has been Black horror, and like I don't know if like his blend of Black horror is why it's been rejuvenated. But which I can't even say that that's true, because a lot of Black horror does have like social commentary in it. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, like, he was right place, right time, and his ideas were very good, and it was definitely very fresh. And I think coming from a lens where everybody can kind of participate in it, but like, again, the girls who know.
Yeah.
So, and I appreciate that about him, because he's opened up the doors for Black horror to sort of be in conversation again
and prosper again, which is good, because we got a Candyman remake, which I don't think would have happened if he didn't come on the scene. So like,
probably not, honestly, because Candyman has just been. They had like a few like spinoffs, and you know, nothing that touched the original. And yeah, for decades, that was like Black people's favorite horror movie was Candyman. And I wish like people would have, and that like that includes me too, but like I wish that people would have made that connection sooner of like social issues and Black horror. Because that's the only real reason why I think people liked Candyman. Because otherwise, it was like this Black dude pining over this white lady. And it's like, nobody's really into that. Like, I don't know. Like, no tea, no shade. But like, Black people don't really... we don't really care for that narrative like that. Yeah. But it was in the hood. And it's like, oh, this is different. So I think that's why it resonated the way that it did when it first came out. But
I mean,
more like
I agree. And we talked a little about organization, a little bit about your, not as artistic process, but how you think about how people feel about manga, anime, and all that kind of stuff like that. And also how you have, you know, worked to achieve the goals that you set forward for yourself, and how you've blended in yourself. What advice would you have for Black women? I want to do this as a macro and then micro, right? So generally, what advice would you have for Black women that want to get into manga and anime? And then if you have, you know, micro, you know, specifically the horror genre, what advice would you give them if they want to make their own thing?
All right. Boom. So the macro, the wider of the two, the big one. For any Black women, or even women just wanting to get into the manga space, I would say, first of all, follow your girl, especially the YouTube channel, because I'm gonna be putting some blogs up soon. I just told you, like, or maybe I didn't tell you, I was telling somebody else, but I got some camera equipment. So, you know, gonna be doing these vlogs soon. And yeah, I think that'll be something that people will enjoy and like get a lot of value from. So that's on the micro level. But in addition to that, just do it. I would say just go forth and do it. Try to get into a mindset and a headspace where you just get lost in your own creations. If it's not fun for you, it's not going to be fun for anybody that's reading. And I would also say that it is a lot harder than it looks. My assistant, who is a femme, she is also an aspiring manga creator. And we have these creator sessions in my Discord. That's actually where I was just coming from, where my community will kind of discuss like what creative things they've done the week prior and what they can do, what they're planning to do for the upcoming week. And she has been talking about her manga journey. She's still new at it, and she's on the first chapter of her first manga, and she's like, oh boy, this is a lot. These pages is crazy. I only have 20 pages to do, and I'm struggling. And I'm like, yeah, girl, welcome to the club. And as soon as you finish them 20 pages, you're not going to want to touch this shit no more. And then a few weeks going to pass or a few days, and you're going to be like, wow, I feel guilty. I need to get back up on it. And then you're going to get back up on it. There's going to be a little bit of friction, but the more that you do it, the easier that it gets. But you honestly really just got to just do it. And make it a routine, make it fun, you know? To quote Jordan Peele, since, you know, that is the man of the hour, he says, follow the fun. Truly, truly follow the fun. Like, if it's starting to drag your stories and they're starting to get boring, or even if the story that you're working on is not feeling fun, scrap it. Save it for another day and work on something new. You know? Even if you intend to get back to it, you can always work on something new. Mm-hmm. So I would say just get started. Play around with it. There's no rules to this, truly. And if you need rules and you need structures, there are books out there. Shonen Jump has produced, Viz Media has produced a bunch of books and like resources on how to make manga. There's Bakuman. You can read it. You can watch it. There's plenty of YouTube guides that are out there. We were talking about White Manga earlier. White Manga has made plenty of tutorials. There's absolutely nobody stopping you from doing what you want to do. So just dip your toe in, and then dip your foot in, and then dip your leg in, and then dip your whole body in, and just do it.
So this is kind of my last question, kind of not. It depends. You know, my brain just starts working sometimes, depending.
I ain't getting into the micro, but it's cool.
Oh, you did. My fault. We paused for a second. You know, it was a mic drop. My fault. Micro. I do want to hear your thoughts on like how you would.
Since we did kind of go over it, you know what? I'm gonna save that for the YouTube. So follow the YouTube channel, because I'll be talking about how to write horror one shots on there. Wow. And how to do horror. You slipped up. You dropped the mic. Then you tried to pick it up. Nope, keep it on the floor.
I was like, damn. I hate that.
I want to dominate the combo. I was like, maybe he got something to say. Okay. Maybe he got something to add.
Hey, this is your show. I'm just living in it. You know what I mean? That's what this is.
I'm dead.
Oh.
But yeah. Mm. Go ahead. The mic is on the floor. Go ahead.
We're going to come back to it. Recently, this is a fun question, not a fun question. Recently, you created a beautiful mural for NTI. If you haven't seen it, go to her page, go to her YouTube. She like has the vlog of her going and looking at it. It's a beautiful mural in New York for NTI's Cranes for Our Future campaign. Mm-hmm. And it's depicting the history and future of nuclear weapons. And also like, you know, talking about the danger of them and like how bad they are and like how they've affected people's lives around the world. even in, right here in the United States. And you did a great interview with him, which I think is definitely worth the read also. Go check that out.
Thank you.
As someone who pulls from unique experiences of Black womanhood, if you were to create a mural detailing those experiences, what would be your influences for it?
Of Black womanhood?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Definitely some... Wait, you mean as like, as atomic... Like with atomic weapons, or just like
doesn't have to be atomic weapons. Doesn't have to be atomic weapons. Doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be.
I had a visual in my mind, and I was like, "Ooh, that's kind of cool." But like,
doesn't have to be that. But I mean, I like, you know, the dichotomy of like, you know, art has purpose, right?
Right.
And a lot of all your art has purpose, you know, and especially again how you use your unique experience as, you know, black woman and your shared experience as Black woman, right? As a catalyst for a lot of stuff that you draw and write. So if you were to create a mural, you know, again, depicting the dichotomy and depicting, you know, the beauty in the horror, what would be your influences? You know, how would you make it?
If we're talking about like Black women and femmes, I got to go back to the beauty thing. I'd probably, oh gosh, I have some visuals in my head, but I would probably just go back to the beauty thing. Like the relationship between like Black women and femmes, between like beauty, hair, like self-esteem, skin color, like it's so intertwined. I've never seen such issues as intertwined like in a group of people before. And it's just like, I don't know. Maybe that's like saying too much, but like for me in my experience, like those all of these issues and all of these complex and like nuanced feelings are so intertwined within like this one group of people that like that would have to be it for me. I don't know. Maybe like some killer relaxers or something floating around, just like spitting white goo at women. Like something like that. I don't know. Something like that. But that would like, I don't know. I definitely take it to like beauty. Beauty and like texturism and colorism. All these different isms that a lot of Black women and femmes go through. That would probably be like, yeah, so many isms. That would be where I'd go to with my Black lady horror mural.
Just a lot of intersectionality, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So I've we didn't talk about them that much, but like I said, you create manga. I have one of them right here. Where's Enter?
Nice. Got your copy. Get your copy.
I'm not sure this is new, but I feel like it's newer than this. But your one shot Wash and Go.
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of would be a great finish to what we talked about today. Could you tell us about it a little bit?
So Wash and Go it's not a personal experience that I've had, but it is based on personal feelings that I have. It is about a woman who goes to a hair salon to get her hair done and is in the middle of like her session, and then she kind of awakens to like this very unsettling situation that's in the hair salon. And that is something that when I was younger and I would go to the hair salon, I have not been to a hair salon or like a hairdresser in years. I do my hair myself. But when I did go, I was not fond of sitting in those chairs with strangers and having my eyes closed for long periods of time. It just made me really uncomfortable. And like, somebody's touching my head. It's kind of like, I think it's like an erogenous zone where it's like, it's just like hyper relaxation.
Yeah.
Same like with somebody touching your feet. It's just it's like a spot that like is not very touched on the body. So like there's like an instant thing of relaxation. So while I would feel comfortable, I would always be like very uncomfortable because I have this stranger giving me this very pleasurable experience, but like I don't know them and I don't know all these people around me and like I don't know what they're doing while my eyes are closed. So that always tripped me up a bit when I was younger. And after I went natural, I was like, yeah, no, we don't have to do that anymore.
you were born to write this, okay? Because me, I have dreads. Like as a man, you know, they didn't start doing that in the barbershops till like 6, 7, 8 years ago. Before, back in the day, you came in, got the cut, get out. You know what I'm saying? Get out.
Right
now, you got some barber. They put you under my my dreads. Like they put me under that. I remember that's the best time. I used to look forward to it. I get my hair retwisted like a little too much probably. I was like, man, I just want
probably you would be easy on that.
I was having a good old time in there because I think it's a gender thing too. You know what I mean? But
I love that though. I think more dudes need to be pampered and like get they scalp massaged and get they locks twist and all types of stuff. Get the manicure. Get the foot rub. The back rub. I think men need to be, specifically black men, I think y'all need to be pampered because y'all be going through a lot. Like, I need y'all to
be self-inflicted.
I need y'all to woosaw. It do. We're not going to talk about that, but it do. But
yeah, I'm like, you like how you're explaining it is like, it's a great premise. And it's like I said, it's like you, one of the, I feel like, when I talk to artists, I've talked to a lot of different mangakas and, you know, comic artists, stuff like that, right? And when they talk about like a certain story that they write, and not every story, some stories are like, you know, I just really thought this idea was cool. But then it's like always that one story, like, you know, they might not, again, you haven't experienced it, but you have this idea, it's like festered. And it's like, wow. And like, so I guess I'm like, this is like one of those things where like, I'm listening to you talk and I'm like, man, I should have read this already. Like, it sounds like I'll be able to feel that feeling that you felt when you were in it. I don't feel that, but like reading through, I'm like, wow, okay, I get it. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there were a lot of women on Twitter that read it and was just like, oh my God, I felt the same. Some women were like, oh my God, I can never go to a hairdresser ever again now. Like, I'm gonna have to do my hair at home. And like, but it was like, it was all in good fun. Like, it was fun. It was like definitely like a good time. But yeah, for sure. It's just, I don't know, these little silly stories that I come up with, a lot of these are like things that I may not have necessarily experienced, but I'm thinking about, or like I definitely feel in that moment, like, I don't know about that. But yeah, for sure. Yeah, why hasn't anybody produced this before, right? But that, right. I also think that's like a little bit of a culture thing too. You know what I mean? Like you said, like dudes wasn't closing their eyes with strange men around them until just 8 years ago. How long barbershops been around? Dudes only just got comfortable with closing their eyes in public.
You going to get the wave cut, not a dude saying, hey, lay down. Before, back in the day, you tell me, lay down. What you mean? What you mean, right. Lay down?
Right, square up. Like. But right, yeah, so, no, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, yeah, that, like, I guess that blending of, like, gendered experiences is also kind of fun as well, I think. So, you know, not everybody can understand, like, this experience.
100%. So I'm out of questions. All right, we're gonna do this again. I'll come back with more different ones.
They were so good.
Gigi Murakami. You can follow her on all the links will be in the description for the podcast. And if you're reading this, then I don't know what to say to people reading. I mean, because you're reading, the links are embedded. So you just click her name somewhere in there.
And they're below.
They're also below.
Or across.
Somewhere. They're in there. They're in there.
Right.
But to finish off, in classic black anime fashion, we have our last words category. Now, in last words, this is to... You can say positive things, but I don't encourage that because that's not who I am inside. So this is to get your slander. If you want to, if you, you could say, again, positive things are always fine. Get your slander off, you know, talk and talk about, you know, whatever anime, manga, slander, you know. Yes, hate. Hate. That's what I use this period for. My pod mates, they look at me like, Aaron, I don't got nothing bad to say to them. I'm like, make something up then, all right?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, so say something positive, say something negative, but just last words, something that you want the people to know. Something that's might have been on your heart for a while that you need them to know.
Something that's been on my heart for a while, and I know I'm going to get some hate for this. Demon Slayer was not good. I didn't like it. I did not like it. And it's a shame. Because I know if I did some Demon Slayer artwork, that shit would fly off the shelves, but I did not like it. I seen the whole first season. I done seen Mugen Train. My best friend, like, forced me to watch everything. I saw the first 12 episodes on my own, and then she was like, no. You gotta watch everything. So I watched everything with her, watched Mugen Train, read some of the manga. No disrespect to the manga artists. Some of the panels are a little unreadable, so I couldn't do it. I had to watch the anime. I don't like it. It's not good. It's not good. I don't understand nothing. How do the powers work? I don't understand it. Why do we have levels if there's no real meaning to the levels?
There's no powers. They don't. Only the demons have powers. Remember, they're just breathing different.
Why is that a power? What are we doing here? Why is this so visual? What's going on? I don't understand. I just it's not for me. It's not for me. I don't think it's I don't.
If
I think the only thing that's is what?
If it wasn't for you, foldable.
You said if it wasn't for me, foldable?
No, you so
wait, what? Like, wait, what?
Have you seen any of the Fate series? Fate Stay Night, Fate Zero.
I have not seen it, but I know about it, yeah.
So, okay, that's probably why you don't know who they are. Ufotable the studio. That's the studio that made Fate and is the studio that's animating Demon Slayer. They're the reason why it looks like it does. I mean, of course, they've had, you know, the manga.
I mean, it looks good. Yeah. The animation like that, looks beautiful.
If you watch, so there's a, I feel like Fate, I'm not a Fate stan. I just love Fate. Like, I get the criticisms, but at the same time, I don't care. Fate, Stay Night, Unlimited Blade Works. We call that Unlimited Budget Works. Because when you watch it, it's the animation is next level, out of this world. Top three animation ever for fight scenes, all that. Choreography's on point, the flashy, it's all that, right? So they're the ones who made Demon Slayer. They've also, I'm trying to think of, and it, what have they made outside of those? Not a lot. They were like, they did almost all the Fates except for the most recent one that just came out. That was A1 Pictures. But they did most of the Fates. That's why they all look gorgeous. And then they did Demon Slayer. And they've done other ones, but like those are the most popular ones.
Demon Slayer looks gorgeous. I just don't understand the powers. I do like Tanjiro's character. I do like a soft boy. I like the gender mixing. I do. I just don't understand the powers or the breathing. I don't understand the point behind the breathing stuff. I don't know. It's just not very well explained. It's just not very well thought out to me. It's beautiful in the animation, confusing in the manga. It wasn't good. I don't like it. I'm a Togashi girl. So like, and Togashi has like graphs and breakdowns of how all the powers work. And I'm just like, okay, it may not be realistic, but I can understand it. I don't understand how breathing differently, like, okay, breathing different, that's the power. Yeah. How do we quantify that? Because that's important in order to get the stakes right. And I could not feel the stakes for any of the fights. I didn't care. Like, not to be like flippant that I didn't care, but I did not care about if people won or not because I didn't know how to care. Like, what are the stakes? I don't know what's really... like, I don't know. So Demon Slayer was not good. I'm sorry. Don't hate me, y'all. Don't hate me. Still buy my manga, please. But it wasn't good. I didn't like it. I gave it so many chances.
You were great at
so many chances.
This is a great. I was great. And you're also correct. Also correct. So it's fine. It's fine.
But the animation was great. I do like the animation. It's a lot more, it's a lot better than the manga. Again, no shade to the manga artist, but their style is very sharp and there's just a lot going on. And like, it's not the easiest to follow for me. But I'm also used to older manga artists who have like less dynamic paneling, which is why my paneling is not as dynamic. But I don't know, even with more dynamic paneling, like Yosuke Murata, Yusuke Murata, the manga artist for One Punch Man, plenty of dynamic panels, very readable stuff. Demon Slayer manga is just not that readable.
You like a god, you come like a god to a peasant. Come on now. Like One Punch Man is gorgeous. One Punch Man is like,
it is. Well, okay. Let's, who is somebody else? I don't know. All I read is gods, because that's what I'm aspiring to be. So,
you're great at this. You're great at this.
I'm just saying.
I'm gonna just call you next time. Like, yeah, you got something else? Just put you to the mic next time you do a pod. Hey, you got anything else you want to say? Like, just put it. You great at this. Oh, golly.
I'm just saying.
I was gonna make this a pod exclusive, but since I gotta put it in the fucking article. Now.
I'm just saying. You gotta follow the greats.
I like Demon Slayer. I watch it because like for me it's like I don't feel the stakes because I feel like they try to. It's so formulaic. It's to me. It's like
it's very formulaic.
Yeah, it takes away a lot of like me caring. It's like,
yeah,
it's fight, training arc, fight, training arc, fight. Like, there's no. Like I'm an older anime guy. Like, yeah, I got, you know, trigger on my wrist, on my arm, and so like I like a story that takes time to, away from the fights to develop characters and then brings it back to the fights. So now I feel like I care more about this character in the fight. I don't like shows where I have to get in the fight and you have to take away from the fight to show me two episodes of flashbacks to then be like, okay, now you care about them.
Yeah, this is information we need early on so that I can feel compelled. So that's another point, and I totally forgot about that. But yeah, it's incredibly formulaic. There really isn't a lot of backstory that's happening before the fights. A lot of it is taking place in flashbacks, which I understand why people do that. I love a good flashback.
Yeah.
But I do feel like there needs to be an anchor there before the flashback to kind of pique your curiosity as to, like, getting that information. Like, your curiosity should be piqued. There should be information missing. The fight happens, flashback, that is the context, mind blown, fight is improved. You know what I mean? Yeah. I didn't get that in Demon Slayer, and I've gotten that in other anime, and it's such a simple thing, but it just wasn't in Demon Slayer. And so I essentially don't know anything about the characters. I don't really care about the characters. Absolutely fabulous designs. The design work is good. The character designs are good. But I don't, there's no substance there. I don't know anybody. I don't know how to feel as I'm watching the show. And like, I don't care because I don't know what I'm supposed to care about. So how can I get invested? And I don't know where to attach to. Where do I plug my feelings at? Like, I don't have a spot. And it's not enough for me to plug my feelings into the character designs, even though they're amazing. And like, I forget the mangaka, I forget her name, but or their name, but they knew what they were doing as far as the designs go, because those were cosplay ready designs. Like, just point blank period. They knew what they were doing with that. And that in itself is respectable. But as far as like storytelling, it's just not, it's not a great story. It's very formulaic and it's structurally on paper good. In practice, it's not good though. It's just not good. I don't feel anything. It's just, I spend too much time with Togashi. I'm a Togashi girl. Like, I need, and sometimes Togashi does a little too much like backstory or like, you know, too much exposition, character building, exposition. But like, that's what I'm used to. So like, if you ain't got none of it, I'm just like, I don't care. Where do my feelings go at? I don't care. You breathing fire. I don't care. You breathe in water. I don't care. Electricity. I don't care. Like, it's flashy, but like, where do I care at? I don't care. I don't care.
I was gonna say, give something. Me you went 10 for 10. You went 10 out. You went 10 out of 10.
I need more. I just need more. It could have just been more. I mean, I appreciate it for what it did because it scratched one piece in the face with the manga sales during the pandemic, and I love that. I love an underdog story, but they just wasn't gonna get my money because I didn't like it. Unless you count the app, because I read it on the app, and I will gladly pay for Shonen Jump app. Shonen Jump and Viz app, but
pay the artist, yeah.
It just
shout out Viz, sponsor me.
A Phoenix. You put speaking that out there, right?
But I don't got anything. She took 10 out of 10, perfect.
I'm done because they finna fry my ass on Twitter. I already know it.
On here, top three. Might be number one. I might have to do like a compilation of all last words someday. But
they finna fry me on Twitter, boy. I'm about to be a fish fry, bro.
But
to light my ass up.
This the only clip I'm posting. This is the only clip I'm posting this interview. I'm just gonna blag it.
Oh man. Oh boy.
But if you're listening, thank you for listening. I 100% appreciate you. You know, once you listen, once you're part of the family, welcome to the family. If you again want to read the transcript, see some pictures and like that, more a little bit extra stuff, that'll be in the article, which you can read on offblackmag.com, offblxxkmag.com. And we'll be back next time with another interview. Appreciate you, Gigi, for hopping on here. Great time.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
And so until next time.
Word.